Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go around the NFL in the loop style.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Brought to you by Quick Assist. Here's John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
On Houston's Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
John Lopez, Figgy Fig, myself, Reginald Adetula. And on a Tuesday, you know what time it is. Time for B. Scott to join us. So before we get into going around the NFL, I want to continue what was the question of the day, where you guys continue to mention other things that would set you off. And I wanted to make sure to let our guy B. Scott get in on the fun here.
Y'all mentioned spitting. I just don't feel like y'all went far enough. I am an extremist on spitting.
I know we're on wax, so I don't want to say the things that I need to say.
No, listen.
Hold on, B. Scott.
Okay, cool.
And I feel comfortable with this, and maybe this can be a warning.
All right? PSA.
But if you spit on someone,
yeah,
and that person turns around and kills you right where you stand and or sit or lay, I witness it.
No, I didn't.
I will turn around.
No, I didn't.
And walk away.
You get it.
Because it will be a justified homicide.
Yeah.
Justified death.
What'd you say? I won't be a witness.
I will not be a witness. I will not get in the way of justice.
That's a very conscious decision of disrespect. Like, yeah. That's absolutely.
My two little ones, 9 and 7, I think this was maybe a year ago, one of them spit on the other. And mm-hmm. I stopped at a meeting and I said, listen, I love you both. But the next time one of you spits on the other, if the other one goes off on you to the point of no return,
don't come talk to
it me. Will be justified. Justified. Let my kids know immediately.
I love that.
We will not be spitting unless we're ready to kill or be.
I will not be a witness.
Unless we are ready to kill or be killed.
What happened, B. Scott? I have no idea.
Nothing.
No, you're right, though, man. It's so disrespectful, man.
Spitting? Oh, no.
Man, just punch me in the face, man.
Yeah. Right, you took your bodily fluids.
Uh-huh. Yes,
we're not doing.
No,
that.
No. We're not doing that.
We're not doing that. Either you got to kill. I'm gonna kill you, or you got to kill me.
It's now officially blood sport
today. Sight.
I love it.
713 said no one mentioned relationship cheaters. Yeah, because that gets tough with the. Yeah, I mean, I imagine that you get to that place. Of course, you're gonna have a very heavily hot worded conversation. All right, let's get into around the NFL, what we learned in week two, starting in reverse in some ways. Monday Night Football, I feel like we could take this one of two ways. Either the Eagles are more unserious than the Falcons have always been, but mm-hmm. or the Falcons have found a little bit of something in a way to reverse what feels like has been a long-term curse in two ways, which is the Falcons being the Falcons and, you know, losing a situation, or primetime Kirk Cousins. Ooh, where cool. Kirk Cousins, late in that game, on a potential game-winning drive, goes 5 of 6 for 70 yards and a touchdown, right? When it gets to the tough moments, we are not used to Kirk Cousins doing that. Kirk Cousins, who is not 100% and said as much last night, went and had a game-winning drive. Which one do you feel is more reasonable here, B-Scott?
So all of that that you said, and if Saquon Barkley just catches the damn ball,
of course,
we can dismiss a lot of the points that you just made. So I don't think it's that the Eagles aren't actually serious. I think that was an anomaly of Saquon not making a play that he would normally make. Mm-hmm. It erases a lot of things. But I will say, like, to the different points that you make, I think the biggest one is that the Falcons are closer to legitimate than I think I was willing to give them credit for. Their defense is legitimate. They added Justin Simmons, who we talked about a lot throughout the season of being a possibility for the Texans. But you make you give a safety unit of Justin Simmons and Jesse Bates, and we saw what Jesse Bates was able to do in that game.
Yeah.
And that obviously they brought in Matthew Judon.
Yeah.
Like, their defense is legit. Raheem Morris is their coach, a legit defensive coach. And then Kirk Cousins is adequate, as much as we like to rag on Kirk Cousins. And I'll admit, I've participated plenty in it, but he is a quarterback that you can win with if you have a good enough defense and you have enough weapons to try to make it happen. So, like, I think that the Falcons in an NFC that we often diminish should be considered a bit more of a factor than they were going into the night.
So I'm watching this game, and this is what I learned, Reggie, B. Scott. If you don't, in today's NFL, when quarterback production has been down the first couple of weeks and yardage and all that stuff, we've all seen the stats. If you don't have a good defensive front, you got no shot. Like, what happened to the Eagles' defensive front? You know, they weren't really blitzing a lot. They got to him a little bit, but
talk to the Colts about that, too.
Dude, like, if you don't have a defensive front that can get to the quarterback, and that's where the Texans, if you want to kind of localize it here, like, what they can do with their front four or five or whatever. Like, Kirk Cousins is good, to your point, B. Scott, but he's not that good.
No. but he operated with precision on that last drive. You got to give him credit for it. I was in real time making the joke, if it's 3rd and 7, he's going to throw it 5 yards.
That's right.
Yeah.
Kirk short of the sticks, Cousins. Like, I was doing it in real time. And to his credit, he made it happen. He performed in the moment. And I think that he is adequate enough to make it happen. I do think a storyline was, hey, him doing it kind of softens that background conversation about Michael Penix Jr., because I was doing that early in the game too. Mm-hmm. Hey, just put Michael Penix Jr. in the game. You know, I was one of those who was cool with that pick and less so cool with them giving $100 million to Kirk Cousins.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, I was more in line with that. So I think he did himself a lot of favors, but the big story to me was actually that Falcons defense being closer to legit than I thought.
And you mentioned the addition of free agent, addition of Jesse Bates, addition of Justin Simmons. They also added Matthew Judon late in this thing.
Yeah,
like,
the trade, yeah.
They have gotten a level of serious that I don't always look at from the Falcons. And, I mean, you guys know it, Fig, mm-hmm. John. I talked about this as I'm going for the pump fake again, and I'm going for the Falcons to win the NFC South. And I already feel stupid saying that out loud.
That was the thing that made me start kind of turning my face as you were going through it in the beginning.
Yeah.
Because you went a little too far from me, like the Falcons ain't the Falcons no more. Listen, you live long enough to know better than that, Reggie.
Okay? Oh, yes. I will always say it, and still.
The Falcons be the Falcons, man.
That's right.
Yeah. They stay the Falcons. So they are not no longer the Falcons. That's still the case. But I think that they can still make a little bit of noise, which they've done before. You know,
hey, we said that about the Texans now.
Listen, how about the NFC South being a little bit stronger than we thought it was
going
to be?
You know where we're going, baby.
Between the Falcons, obviously, what the Saints are pulling off right now. I want to say they might have the highest point differential of anybody
they
in
do.
Football right
that
now.
Because
they blew out, obviously, the Panthers, who were pitiful, but then did it again against the Cowboys.
So between who might be pitiful?
Yeah, right. So between that, obviously, the Bucks have been solid and remain solid. And, of course, we're talking about the Falcons. The NFC South might be a little bit.
Oh, such a clutch offseason pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too. What,
you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bit better than we thought.
All right, so let's go around the NFC South a little bit to the aforementioned New Orleans Saints. John or Fig, Scott, I want to see what you think about John's assumption here or feeling here about these Saints.
I think the Saints are the best team in the NFL.
That's a take. Actually, it's not a scoff. I am impressed with the conviction in which he said it.
No, I mean, look, you can say what you can about the Panthers, but they go to Dallas, man. And I know Dallas at home isn't always, you know, great. And that wasn't even close from the first snap.
No.
It wasn't, from the first snap. And they have, and the other thing about it is, the reason I say that is Clint Kubiak is just dealing right now. I think because of his name and his game, I think he's going to be a head coach next year.
Yeah, I'm with you on everything except the final conclusion that you reach. Like, I like Clint Kubiak. I think what they're doing is impressive. They, again, a much better football team than I thought, but I'm still having a tough time. And this is not a knock on Derek Carr, who I actually do respect as a quarterback. I just have a tough time believing a team with Derek Carr as their quarterback can actually be the best team in football. I have to see a lot more.
That's more macro.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I'm saying, like through 2 weeks, they're the best team in the NFL.
Oh, I think that's an irrefutable fact.
Yeah.
Through 2 weeks. I'll go with you on that. Mm-hmm. Through 2 weeks, I mean, the point differential speaks for itself. Like they have scored 40-plus in two straight games against, albeit against, you know, the Panthers was one of them, but those are still two NFL teams that they did that against. So the point you're making about Clint Kubiak is a good one, and the Saints, watch out.
Yeah, I mean, offensively, I've been kind of impressed, not just what you guys said, but unlocking Derek Carr is a thing that I have been waiting for because he's always had the talent. I mentioned that I made this point a few times. Having him have the willingness to do that in an offense that's not just straight up boring has been really interesting. The other side of that, when we talk about the NFC South, is the Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you've learned something from them? Because I've learned to not expect that team to you know, regress, and that maybe Baker Mayfield is the number one overall pick that we had expected at some point, or at least some facsimile of that.
Yeah, just coaching matters. I think situation matters. I think that's the big thing with the Bucs, not just now, but even going back to last year. Like they were a miraculous drive away from actually beating the Texans last year. Like that 40-plus second drive that CJ Stroud puts together last year. hear it in RG Stadium. Like, that was a legitimate football team. I know a lot of people might look at it as like they were just average, but I think Baker Mayfield is on the, you know, the other side of average, like above average, not quite elite, but I would rather have him than not. Ask the Cleveland Browns about that, right? Like that, like to me, that is the story there, is that, hey, there is redemption, and that coaching does matter.
I think the Bucs are, you know, Figgy picked them, and Reggie and I picked the Falcons, but how can you deny what Baker Mayfield has done?
Yeah,
you can't.
And it was cooking last season.
But you know what's funny though? Even still, somehow I like the Falcons and the Saints better. No, I mean, and it's not even a knock. So for some reason, still, like, I look at the weapons that the Falcons have and the defense that we talked about earlier, and then everything that you mentioned, John, about what the Saints are doing offensively with Clint Kubiak and Derek Carr, the reemergence. Somehow the Bucs are the steady Eddie of the NFC South, but I'm more intrigued by and trust right now more the Falcons and the Saints, which feels weird.
And again, the Falcons especially, because they are indeed the Falcons.
Yes, they stay the Falcons.
Some other things around the NFL, things that we learn. I think that we agree in this, and I was here before. Justin Fields needs to be the starter for the Steelers.
Oh, for sure he does.
What are we even doing?
Justin Fields, I mean, he needs to be the full-time starter. Like his numbers, if you look at just the numbers, we're like, okay, whatever. But he had one big, amazing pass play called back on a penalty that was like, wow, it was C.J. Stroud-like. No, there is no question to me. Forget Russell Wilson. Justin Fields is your starting quarterback.
So I don't think that Russell Wilson brings anything additional over Fields. And Fields, I imagine, like, you still have the possibility of upside.
Okay, so that's a better way of saying what I was going to say, because I feel like my overall analysis on this might be a little reductive. But to me, you look at Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, neither of them at this stage of their quarterback, at this stage of their career as a quarterback, would be considered like a high-level passer right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's neither of them. But Russell Wilson no longer offers you what he used to, and I think Justin Fields offers you in that dynamic even more than Russell Wilson ever did.
It's right, when you're talking about the mobility and those things.
I mean, stock, or even just like, I'm talking about today and the future.
Yeah.
Honestly, Lopez, like I think in the immediacy and the future, you talk about buying stock, I would go Justin Fields 8 days out of the week.
Let me ask you something else, both of you guys. That was one of my takeaways from what we learned in NFL Week 2. Why would anyone, this is a serious question, why would anyone hire anyone as a head coach or an offensive coordinator that's not off the Shanahan tree?
I don't have a great answer for you in that regard. Like, we are in Sean McVay touch the hem of his garment territory.
Yeah, and not just, like, I like this, Lopez, because it's not even just from the offensive side.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, even the defensive guys that come out of the tree.
Well, because they bring in those offensive guys.
Exactly. Exactly. You know. And then they also come in with like a certain level of leadership, a certain level of moxie.
Yeah.
And I know Robert Saleh's not working out exactly the way Jets fans wanted it to, but I think
how much of that do you attribute to him himself?
Right. And I think there was a reason why he was attracted for that job to begin with. I don't think that was all manufactured. I think things just have not worked out.
Yeah.
But, you know, to his fault, to whoever's fault it is, but there is something about all of the guys that come out of that tree that I think is appealing.
And you talk about some of the defensive guys, like even just from this week, Cardinals, Drew Petzig, he's a Shanahan Kubiak guy. Kevin O'Connell, Saints, Clint Kubiak. Patriots lost, but Alex Van Pelt, you know, got something going on right there. He's another Shanahan Kubiak guy. Matt LaFleur, we saw what they did. Falcons, Zach Robinson, Shanahan Kubiak tree. Why would anyone, if I have an opening, I'm like, okay, but who's off of the Shanahan and Kubiak tree? I want one of those guys.
You would almost have to be a retread. You would have to already have been established. Like, if you're an up-and-comer, if you're Bobby Slowick, right? And Bobby Slowick obviously comes from the Shanahan tree. But if you're his age, our age, right? You need to be...
Thanks for making me feel less accomplished.
He's got, I think, 5 years on you.
Yeah.
If you still want to be an OC, Reggie, you got 5 years to get there.
I'm gonna get in my playbook.
But yeah, man, there is a clear lineage there and a clear thing that Kyle Shanahan is doing out there.
Plus, and this is the thing that I've always loved about it, I think Jordan Rodriguez of the Athletic put together a fantastic podcast called
Play Callers
about this whole tree. they have an interconnectedness that also seems to help, right? So not only are you hiring a guy, one of the things that you worry about is like the turnover of, once you hire a coach, what are his coordinators going to do and how long are they going to be there before they move?
Yeah.
This group seems to have a good track record of then finding the next guy that will then fill that coordinator role and teaching down. I think Kyle Shanahan gets a lot of credit for making sure to facilitate an environment that allows people who are quality control and like position coaches to also learn in that process, to factor in and then ultimately grow. And so I think that growing the next coordinator and not being fearful of something that like the Eagles had, where both of their coordinators left and they've had a big shift in what the team is because they have not had somebody ready to step in, I think that also poses an interesting
thing. It was one of the more fun parts of the offseason was trying to figure out what does the staff look like, or what is the next iteration of coordinators look like when Bobby Slowick and Gerard Johnson, if and when they move on,
yeah,
right? And how, and we've had some of these conversations ourselves behind the scenes, like how are they training for that? And we know that they're constantly doing it, and you've got to have a certain level of confidence in it based off of the track record so far.
There you go. Around the NFL here in the Loop, Sports Radio 610 with our guy B. Scott sitting in for this entire hour. And speaking of, coming up next, let's get into B. Scott's thoughts on these Texans and more. We'll do that next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atatula.
I would love B. Scott.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's favorite time of week when Brandon K. Scott joins the studio and you get to hear that intro.
Text board is like a request line.
That's right. As if we're not going to play it.
They're like, play it.
Right? As if we were just going to be like, nah,
where's the intro?
We'll wait till next week.
I'm like, 11:20, guys. 11:20.
Hey, it's a nice little trick to keep y'all around, man. Stay tuned.
Well, don't give
Scott's
them.
In. Stay tuned for that intro. No, they going to come back because they want it. Figgy put that bad boy together, man. It's flawless.
Yeah. He sprinkled something in there. I don't know what it is. Might not be legal. But yeah. B. Scott, Hyrum Clark in studio on In the Loop. And it's time to get to B. Scott's thoughts after a 19-13 Sunday Night Football win for your Texans. It was a home opener. It was good to be able to trail you, be on your heels all day, get a feel for what it is to be at NRG Stadium and be B. Scott.
Yeah, I actually did think about this earlier today. I didn't think about it like in the immediacy, but today before I came into the show, I was like, oh, that was pretty cool to be a part of Reggie's, all of us, right?
Yeah.
To be a part of Reggie's first game experience.
Yeah.
And then we even got to do some of it in the locker room and in the post game. So that was a pretty cool thing, a pretty cool moment to be a part of. But man, as far as the game goes, and the Texans themselves, I got two complaints and a win. And I'm glad for a win. I was the same way last week. But I feel like my complaints are the offensive line and Bobby Slowick. I got offensive line and Bobby Slowick problems.
Okay.
But I'll start with the O-line because I feel like, and I'm a little uncomfortable with this, I'm going to be vulnerable with y'all for a minute, but I feel like we celebrated a little bit too early the offensive line and a little bit too much. And I was uncomfortable with it at the time, but I didn't want to be the buzzkill.
Yeah.
And I did think that, look, when you rush for, you got one running back go for 150 plus on 30 carries, the offensive line does have to get some credit.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought there were a lot of issues with them as well in that game. And I was talking about it in game. Like, hey, the offensive line has got some issues. This was last week, okay, against the Colts.
Yeah.
Offensive line's got some issues. By the end of the game, Joe Mixon is the AFC Offensive Player of the Week. So it's like, okay, well, maybe this is not the appropriate time to point this out. But then it happens sort of again, you know, in this game where, to me, they could not establish the run and the pass protection was still leaky, okay? Mm-hmm. So now we've had back-to-back weeks where the offensive line has not lived up to the expectation or standard, I would say, in pass protection, and then now an inconsistency in how they did the run blocking in the first game versus this Bears defensive front, which I would say is probably a lot better, probably from top to bottom, just a better defense overall, and I'll give them credit for that. But now you've got an inconsistency in run blocking and back-to-back weeks, a consistency in poor pass protection with C.J. Stroud having to save you.
Yeah, this is where numbers will lead you astray at some points. And I'm using a roundabout way of explaining this, but, you know, you need a data set that's large enough for you to filter out the noise.
Yeah.
One data point is not large enough to filter out the noise by any means, especially when you're not able to contextualize it. And the context that we were trying to utilize was, this isn't a Colts defensive line. that we expect to be very good. You look at the names, DeForest Buckner, you look at Grover Stewart, you got some names on there, and you're like,
Quiddy Pay, right?
Yeah, you've got names and you have reason to believe are going to play at a high level. However, as you start to add to that data set, you look at a couple of games where that defensive line has been mauled, and you go, okay, maybe, just maybe, that was, that performance was less about the offensive line and more about that defensive line, right? Yeah. And then you come back to the place where now we have to revise. And the revision is, this offensive line is not up to the standard of a Super Bowl winning, a caliber team.
Yeah.
Is it up to the standard of even just an AFC South winning team? Because you need to have an offensive line at a proper level.
I think it was like first date and second date. Like, what a great first impression. Yeah. I think we all walked away from our first date with the Texans offensive line and we're like, man.
But then I got to know you.
That was pretty sweet.
Now they comfortable.
That was pretty sweet. Second date,
you got
a little expectation, yeah. and you got a little bit of, you get a little more comfort level, like Figgy just said, and you're like,
I ain't open the car door for you.
There's a couple things there that I don't know.
You got hands.
That's how I would put it. First date, second date. First date was, all right. Second date was, eh.
So I would agree with that. And even if you just kind of fixate on the offensive line or the Texans personnel specifically, it's like, I thought against the Colts, Kenyon Green had a special day.
Yes.
I thought Juice Scruggs was really good. I thought Shaq Mason was better against the Colts than he was against the Bears. You know, like, I thought there were like some subtleties that were different. And then, of course, Juice Scruggs did not play in this game against the Bears. And I saw a couple of plays where that ended up mattering, right? Where they got Jarrett Patterson supposed to move up to the second level and block a linebacker.
Yes.
And it ain't happening.
Yeah.
Or he's supposed to, move up to the second level and, you know, hook a linebacker, and he does not get there, and he goes, I'll just keep moving. Like, no, we need that one.
Yeah, that guy right there.
And I don't say that to get in the weeds, but I say it more so to point out there were differences that mattered. And it was probably premature on top of that, to the points that Reggie just made about, hey, maybe that defensive front isn't all of what it was cracked up to be, on top of the fact that, hey, like, a lot of that was Joe Mixon going out there being a dog, running over defensive backs. Now, give him credit for getting to the second level. But, again, Kenyon Green had a really big day, and who has also hurt you a couple of times with penalties, you know, drive-killing penalties, right? Cade Stover had a big day as a fullback slash tight end. Like, there were subtleties where we gave a little bit too much credit, I think, to the offensive line just mauling folks, as opposed to Joe Mixon being exceptional and a couple of offensive linemen being very, very good.
I think PFF agrees with you. We were talking in our first segment, do you have more confidence in the offense or the defense? And with the offense, they had three Texans offensive linemen in this game score under 60% on their totals. And those three were Kenyon Green, Titus Howard, and Shaq Mason.
Yeah. So I'm glad you brought that up, because y'all tell me if this is waffling or not. But I agree with Lopez and disagree with him at the same time.
You're not the first. Go ahead and ride that fence, baby. Yeah. Let's go.
But look, though, all of the evidence gives you what Lopez's conclusion is, right? Mm-hmm. You trust the defense more because the defense has outperformed the offense up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
But everything is still predicated, for me, with this team, at least, on C.J. Stroud.
Absolutely.
So it's like I don't really care about all of the facts. The one fact that I can give you is that C.J. Stroud is still the quarterback of this team, and I don't know if they win these games with subpar quarterback play.
Oh,
I don't feel as comfortable about them being the only 2-0 AFC South team if C.J. Stroud is not the quarterback, even if Kyahmi Fairbairn is kicking field goals from 250 yards away.
Yeah, but I think that's when you definitely, and that's why I put it in that place, like AFC South winning, maybe, right? Like, when we start changing the expectation, when you start talking about how they compare against, you know, the best of the best in the league, and maybe you'll come back around and circle to the idea that it does not feel like there's an elite team in the NFL right now, right? Like, maybe you go to that place.
Yeah.
But still, we're projecting forward. Once we get past this first 4 weeks of nebulous, you know, kind of finding yourself, the team seemed to go through, especially with a lessened preseason. Once those teams start finding, water finds its level, right? Now is that offensive line capable to keep C.J. Stroud in a place where now he's not just having to make plays, but he can go and hit some of those passes that he was not able to hit on Sunday night that you saw were open, but it's because he's navigating and now having to get his eyes up and find the right spot.
I feel like I've been guilty of putting more, because you want to go glass half full, putting a little bit more focus on the dynamic nature of the scramble drill. Oh, look at CJ and Nico Collins in the scramble drill. Oh, look at CJ and Tank in the scramble drill. Oh, it's so cool. But why is he in the scramble drill all the damn time?
Right.
Oh, I'm very appreciative of you being in the glass half full, because I've been in the glass half empty, and I felt kind of bad about it, to be completely honest.
But all of it is real, though. The fullness, the empty, like, whichever side you're coming from, and like, yeah, they've got some things to feel good about it, about C.J. Stroud being one of them, but also some things to be concerned about. Like the tone of the locker room. We were in there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They won the game, but you could sense some frustration. Some, hey, man, we got to be better than that. Like, we're trying to win. Like, this is not exactly winning football, even though we won these games.
Which you love that they have that kind of response. You don't love that they have to have that kind of response. All right, you had another thing you wanted to hit on, and I want to make sure we get to it.
Yeah, so Bobby Slowick. Like, I love the script.
Yes.
Okay, the script. Bobby Slowick can come up with a hell of a script, man. Mm-hmm. This dude understands how to script an offense for a game. Want to see a little bit more in the way of adjustment, though.
Yes.
You know, I want to see a little bit more in the way of adjustment. Either, hey, what you're doing just flat out isn't working. It's not the matchup that you thought, or that they made the adjustment to your initial plan. What's your adjustment to the adjustment? I feel like either or both could use some improvement, right? And that yesterday or Sunday night's game was indicative of that. Without trying to throw anybody under the bus, mm-hmm. I feel like even the tone of the locker room was, hey, man, we just didn't adjust quick enough, fast enough. And I think everybody was putting the blame on themselves. I don't think they were pointing the finger.
No. Yeah.
But I do think that we can all acknowledge that Bobby Slowick is in charge of making sure everybody is on the same page on whatever the adjustments need to be.
Yeah, and the place for me that was very I focused on was like the run game. It's the question that we've asking mm-hmm. is, hey, can Bobby scheme up a run game? And I think in week one, we might have gotten to the place, and speaking of getting over our skis in some ways, where it was like, okay, Joe Mixon will fix it, whether it's schemed up or not. But apparently, no, you cannot and you should not place that all on the running back. We need to make sure and see that obviously the blocking is good, but then within that you're making sure to help him and give him the opportunity to be his best.
Well, guys, it's not just that, though. Like, it starts with, can he scheme up the run game? Mm-hmm. But the other thing for me is, does he know when to abandon it? And I'm using abandon loosely.
Yes.
Does he know when to go away from it a little bit when it's necessary? Or does he wait too late to recognize, hey, this matchup isn't as
right.
preferable as I thought. Let's do something else. Let's lean on CJ, you know, and maybe the leaky pass protection is a reason why he didn't do that. But I thought that the Bears front showed them very early on that running the ball on first down probably wasn't the best way to go, and he continued to do it.
I thought his script, to your point, was amazing.
Yeah, the beginning.
To start the game.
Icy.
And the motion and getting Joe Mixon on a jet sweep and in the slot and outside. And I was sitting next to Reggie and I was like, this is going to be fun. And then it just kind of stopped.
Yeah.
It just kind of stopped.
I one thing I always try and be cognizant of, because it's easy for me to forget personally, is that it's a long season.
Yeah.
There it is. But then like also like your game plan has to, and your game calling has to progress. It's one of the, it's what I call the, Coach Bro that used to coach in Arizona, that used to coach for the Cardinals, Texas Tech.
Kingsbury,
that was one of his issues in Arizona, was that the offense looked great until it didn't halfway through the season because he did not have places to grow to.
Yeah.
He has places to grow to, but I'd like to start in a better place in your point.
Yes.
All right, B. Scott's thoughts every Tuesday, 11:20 here in the loop. He's not going nowhere, though. We're going to keep it going and talk about what's popping. I think you got some more thoughts that I want to get to, but then also the Astros lose a little bit of a one-worthy offense scuffles. Let's talk about that and more next.
The biggest stories in sports and entertainment. Sports Radio 610 style. In the Loop presents What's Poppin'.
All right, you're in the Loop, Sports Radio 610. What's popping is that B. Scott's still hanging out in studio with us. And let me tell you, the entire break, we were just talking about more stuff with your Texans. I mean, regarding to some of B. Scott's thoughts. And with that being the case, I think you have some more thoughts that you haven't gotten to. So I would like to give you the space to do that here.
Yeah, just I want to acknowledge a couple of players that I didn't do a good enough job trying to earlier in the week. And I know it's only Tuesday. But Kaimi Fairbairn and Jalen Petrie.
Yes.
Like, there are a number of guys that we can recognize, but they win these games, and D'Amico Ryan's talked about this, but I feel like they win these games for two reasons. Kaimi Fairbairn, and the other one is just exploiting the matchup
mm-hmm.
discrepancy, right? Whichever it is. And in the first game, the matchup discrepancy was, hey, that defensive front ain't it in Indianapolis. We're going to exploit that. Okay, I feel like the matchup discrepancy in this game against the Bears on Sunday night was that offensive front that the Bears got. Ain't it? So we're going to exploit that. And that, to me, along with the fact that Kyahmi Fairbairn, as I mentioned before, is kicking field goals from 350 yards away, is the reason why the Texans have won these couple of games. So I want to acknowledge Kyahmi Fairbairn for who, you know, kickers we never talk about. And I'm one of those guys that's like, what are we talking about the kicker for?
No, come
but,
on.
But look, I mean.
Kickers need love, too.
Come on.
Kickers need love, too, man.
He won the two games.
Well, and especially in situations like this, when you're playing at an elite level like this, Kyahmi Fairbairn absolutely deserves a moment to just to be recognized.
Only then, kicker in NFL history to have two games where he knocks down 50-plus field goals. And he did them in back-to-back weeks.
And I'm just not used to feeling this comfortable when the kicker gets up there. Right? Like, maybe it's, I don't know, just life experience or what, but man, Kyahmi gets up there. I'm like, all right, that's three. You know,
well, what was it in the fourth quarter? And I don't have the play by play in front of me, but in the fourth quarter, there was a moment where it would have been a 60-plus or punt or go for it situation for the Texans.
Yeah,
and I was, you talk about confidence. I was like, kick it, man, kick it. That's an automatic 3 points.
Yeah, it affects your decision making, yeah, your game management, your down and distance considerations. Like, you know, how far do we need to get before we're no longer going for it on fourth down, and now we feel comfortable enough to kick to kick the football, given whatever the score is. And then also, like, I think Jalen Petrie, though, you know, I did a lot of talk about the class of 2022 and dudes that needed to prove themselves. And how about three of those guys? I know John Metchie, somebody we talked about a lot and has not yet to be active, but from Kenyon Green to Derek Stingley Jr. to Kenyon Green and Jalen Petrie. Like, I think all of them are doing a pretty good job. And I don't think Stingley necessarily needs to redeem anything. He just needs to stay healthy. But Kenyon Green and Jalen Petrie redemption tour so far, so good. So I feel like I got to acknowledge Jalen Petrie. Whoever that was that texted earlier about him comparing him to the Honey Badger, let's calm down a little
calm
bit.
Calm a little bit on that.
You're not
going
to find anybody in this market that loves Jalen Petrie more than I do. But let's calm the hell down. Tyrann Mathieu's going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Jalen Petrie's having a good first two games of the season.
Yeah.
Let's keep it up. I like it.
But give him something to aspire to.
Yeah. No, I'm not mad at that, but come on now.
I just don't think he's the same style player.
No, I don't know if there are how many style players there are like the Honey Badger.
Yeah.
Man.
Sleep on the Honey Badger. Then,
right. Hey, there's some versatility in there.
Yeah. YouTube.
Yeah.
Go check him out. Yeah. I don't know if the Honey Badger haven't been good enough in a long enough time for you to remember what that dude was like. He was
really made a play the other day.
I just want to sit in the fact that we got B. Scott telling John Lopez, you must not remember what this man looked like.
No.
You don't know nothing about this man.
No, it was the texter. No, because Lopez checked him.
Yeah.
Lopez was like, wait a minute now.
Yeah.
The Honey Badger?
I was trying to create a moment, B-Scott. One man that you do not want to spy to be like at this point, especially if you are in team ownership, David Tepper. There's a lot of heat falling on him, and in this instance, it's coming from Jeff Saturday.
Mm-hmm. How do you think you're going to progress? You have three different systems you're bringing in or having, you know, to make changes, terminology, what we're trying to do, what we're trying to accomplish. There's a lot going on. And by the way, the dudes on that side of the ball are really smart, and they're going to give you a lot of different looks that you're not prepared for. So if you don't have some kind of consistency, it's going to make it even worse.
Yeah.
It's an organizational failure, and Tepper is the one who should fall to him.
Right.
Because ultimately, he makes these convictions and choices and decisions. And everybody's like, oh, like you said, no conviction in Frank, no conviction in the quarterback, no conviction. We're going to change it. We're going to blow it up. We're going to go chase what Houston's doing. That's a freaking joke, man. Like, it makes no sense.
Clearly inspired by Bryce Young being benched. That's been a huge topic of conversation in the NFL. But I love the Jeff Saturday bringing it to a place that I think we were starting to get to, which is organizationally, they failed Bryce Young. And organizationally, that all falls at the doorstep of Dave Tepper.
Is it safe to say that Jeff Saturday's not going to be a head coaching candidate for the Carolina Panthers?
No, not the Panthers.
I mean, he ain't played for them he did the Colts. Exactly. That's what made that one go.
So for some reason, I was watching him this morning and just thinking about like that whole episode of him coaching. And,
I had forgotten about it until you mentioned it.
And how weird that was and how good he is on TV.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, why would he ever not do this?
Because those dudes are different, man. Those dudes, the football.
They just want to. They have to.
They want to, man. They want to be in it.
Yeah, man, but he's so good on TV.
But it's
agreed.
It's an I'll put it this way. Dave Tepper is just a bad NFL owner in every way, you know, and it's an organizational thing. And it trickles down to every aspect of it. Like, if you want to compare it to when the Texans were an embarrassment, they weren't bad. We know that now. They were just kind of in hiding. They were embarrassed because the organization had fallen. And that's a big difference.
Yeah, I know a lot of the conversation about the Stroud versus Bryce thing. Everybody was, you know, mostly into Bryce being the number one pick, even though there was some energy for CJ to be the number one pick. I think everyone should just thank the, if you're a Texans fan, thank the Panthers' incompetence. Because I think that's part of what led them, mm-hmm. like the reasons why I feel like they picked Bryce over Stroud were not the most solid. And that is the, you know, you talk about where the luck changed. That's where one spot where I would point to it, not even getting the number two overall pick, but losing it to a team mm-hmm. that absolutely did not know what to do with it as far as picking it or how to develop it. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, would you trust the Panthers to do either? Pick the number one pick or to develop him once he's picked. Absolutely forget.
Yeah, and I mean, even if you did get somebody that was capable of doing that, the landscape shaking underneath them, you wouldn't give them an opportunity to establish that, right?
Yeah.
Good coaches have made bad decisions. Good coaches have looked bad for periods of time, right? And it takes a level of institutional stability for somebody to get to a place where they can find something being good. It's one of the things that I think in sports has been a little interesting is seeing how short the leash has become.
Yeah.
For management structures in, you know, providing results, because sometimes what you need for results is time, and that has become the greatest luxury in a lot of sports situations.
Yeah, I didn't feel like Matt Rhule was a great head coach. I didn't feel like mm-hmm. Frank Reich was a great head coach. I feel like they were better than what they put out in Carolina. Like, I just felt like those were the destined to fail situations, and that they are.
And why though?
Yeah, well, yeah.
Why?
Starts up top. They
sometimes your hand, one hand is tied behind your back, because this is the thing. This is the really the big thing about David Tepper. He's a dude that meddles too much. You need to have put people that you trust in roles and allow them to do their job. If you then come in and micromanage, you're going to affect what the meal is. If you're coming in and, you know, cooking over the shoulder of the chef in this metaphor I've established.
And that was the issue last season. Remember, mm-hmm. remember when Frank Reich, he was kind of acting weird throughout the season?
Yeah. Like,
he had to have this meeting with the owner and all that stuff. Nah, I think it's 100% him.
It's him.
And it's even worse when you don't know what you're doing. Like, it's bad no matter what, because you don't want to undermine the authority of the people that you supposedly empowered. But especially when you know less than them.
Yeah.
Far less. Oh. It gets real.
Go ahead, Fig.
I was going to say, it kind of make you appreciate the Menaires on this, because
for sure
they don't do that. If they do, we don't know about it.
The only thing they did was have a hand in D'Amico Ryans, and how did that work out? You know, they don't have that.
They're
short
not telling
leash.
You who to draft and all this other stuff, man.
Because make no mistake, Dave Tepper benched him. Dave Tepper did it.
Yeah, the day before.
Yeah.
You have Dave Canales, mm-hmm. the head coach of the Panthers, saying that, yeah, he's our quarterback. We'll go. We'll try and adjust. We'll make things work. And again, we mentioned this. You don't take that job without the understanding and appreciation that that's the quarterback we're working with.
It's a crisis in leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly.
Yeah.
God bless that. That's not the thing that the Texans have. your Astros unfortunately lost the first of a 3-game set in San Diego last night. Spencer Arrighetti was going. He had a good go of it. He had a kind of a hefty pitch low when it came to, I think, the second inning, if I remember correctly. But he goes 5, 3 strikeouts, 2 earned runs. I think really the thing that he did that was impressive was ended a Luis Arraez streak that he had going, that was going for quite a long time. 141 consecutive plate appearances without a strikeout. Arrighetti does it on a curveball down and inside.
So with Arrighetti, I gotta say this, man, and a similar thing happened with Christian, and I'm not claiming to have any kind of mojo or anything like that.
Uh-oh.
But this happened. I can remember last year, before Christian Harris really took off, I think it was Ron who I text. I was like, man, Christian Harris sucks, man. What's going on with Christian Harris? He's been, when healthy, like a Pro Bowl level player ever since. Literally ever since the exact moment that I texted.
Oh, you got the reverse jinx?
Apparently.
Yeah.
Same thing here with Spencer Arrighetti, and this was more public. I tweeted this, man. Hey, Spencer Arrighetti, I feel great about his future. He's a promising prospect and all of that. At some point, he's going to be a high-level contributor to this rotation. That day is not today. Ever since then, the dude has been arguably the second or third best guy that they have. So, a revelation. I think that he is a big part of why I can have, you know, a great deal of confidence in what the Astros have going into the postseason when the time comes. So shout out to Spencer Arrigetti for figuring out. That was a big question about all these guys. You and I talked about this a lot, Lopez. Yeah. These guys who have not done this before, have not been tested in this way, have not had these kind of workloads. How are they going to respond? I think that's still somewhat of an unanswered question because they got more baseball to play. But so far, so good.
Yeah, this is the part of the season when, you know, you've gone beyond some of these guys' like full stretch like that they've seen before, and they're still handling up pretty decently.
I think last night was just one of those. They picked a bad night to face Yu Darvish.
Yeah, Yu Darvish.
Like, Yu Darvish was nothing like this for the last few outings.
Correct.
Nothing. And then all of a sudden, he spins a gem.
Yeah, and of course, Yu Darvish, you always have to know that he has that in him.
Yeah.
But I feel like, you know, especially when you're the Astros, you're used to, you know, you're used to tattooing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, didn't love that only had one extra base hit. That was from Jose Altuve, a double late in the game that actually put him in position to score. He was the lone run that came in. And then also a little bit of news in the outfield department, the outfield that they have taken a lot of flyers on and hit in some ways. We talked about that yesterday. Shout out to Jason Hayward. But Ben Gamel will go to the IL 2 days after he suffered a left knee contusion during Saturday's game. Now, Figgy, did you have anything you want to say about a contusion?
I'm good.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
You have Tommy John surgery?
Yeah, I was like, I figured, figured you might want to. But yeah, there you go.
So broken in three places, you mean?
We have yet to see that. However, I might possibly have my suspicions.
Scratch that, Figgy. I don't want to put that out there. It'd be enough lying going on that they do. I don't want to contribute to the noise.
Okay, but what happens if that's the reverse jinx and he's back real quick, right? It's a 10-day IL stint, so hopefully he can make it right on back right quick. But there you go. That's what's popping here in the Loop, Sports Radio 610. Our guy B. Scott, always joining us in the 11 o'clock hour. I appreciate you very much,
Mike. Fun, man. Appreciate y'all.
I feel like we left things on the table.
We did. That's a good thing.
Till Tuesday.
That's a good thing.
Till next Tuesday. Always make sure you catch B. Scott. He's always doing good work, making sure that the Sports Radio 610 YouTube page and all the website all have fantastic content for you. So don't let his hard work go to waste. Make sure you check those things out. YouTube, sportsradio610.com. See what's happening with B. Scott. All right, coming up next, are we seeing a turning point in NFL offense? There's been some trends early on in the season that have been really interesting. Let's discuss that next.
Oh, such a clutch offseason pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too. What,
you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's the most anticipated WNBA season in history.
And you know what that means.
Court is back in session. Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoop.
And I'm Jordan Robinson. All WNBA season long, we'll be bringing you interviews with star athletes, analysis on your favorite teams,
and lots of hot takes.
Order, order in the court.
Follow and listen to Queens of the Court on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.